your faggot in my beer.
Sorry, I thought it was empty.
You put your faggot in my beer.
Sorry, I said sorry.
Any chance of a pot of tea?
Put your faggot in my beer.
Sorry.
Your faggot in my beer.
Jesus wept.
Go on. On the kettle.
Come away, Anne.
What a tosser.
Yeah.
Let's go away, Stephen. Let's go and watch the sun rise at Dorkeith. Get away from these.
How do we get there?
Fly.
It's about 3 miles to Dorkeith. It'll take us ages to walk there.
Don't be daft.
He's been drinking.
It's 4 a.m. Nobody be on the road. We'll be grand. First song I ever loved. I couldn't bear it back there. Suddenly I hate everybody.
Anne! Jesus, Anne!
I'm afraid she's dead.
She's alive!
John! Over here, this one's breathing.
Anne!
The Sun Always Rises by Katie Hayes.
Sandra! Careful, put your leg over there.
Here, Mummy!
Grand, well done, honey.
Mummy, look at me!
I see you, love. Hi. Yeah, okay, yeah. Try the box marked desk. No, that one is marked big desk. There's big desk and desk. Okay, see you. Okay, girlies, time to go.
Oh, no, I was just getting the hang of it. No way, Mummy, no way, seriously.
Okay, just another 10 minutes, okay?
I'm talking. Is that you?
Sally!
Jesus H. Christ, is that you, Anne Dorgan?
Sally O'Rourke, and the way she might look at you.
You look like a fashion model.
You look like a scarecrow.
Don't be so past remarkable.
Well, you started this.
Anne, I can't believe it. What planet have you just dropped off?
Well, I moved back about a month ago.
Jesus. When did I last see you? It must have been at graduation.
I wasn't at graduation.
Oh, that's right, you weren't there. You're not in the photos.
I never sat my finals.
Of course. Where have you sprung from? I come here every Saturday and I haven't seen you before.
I just bought a house on the avenue. Oh,
you must have loads of dough. Houses around here cost buckets. Only criminals and lawyers can afford them.
Well, we sold our house in Chelsea to move back.
Which one is it?
The one with the red roof.
That is a mansion. I bet it's a palace inside.
Oh, it's a tip at the moment. Boxes everywhere.
I'd heard you were in London, doing big things in publishing.
Yeah, decided to come home when the kids started talking like characters in EastEnders.
My aunt Rita plays bridge with your mum, so I get the occasional update on your meteoric rise through the cutthroat world of London publishing.
Oh, my mother is a fierce brag.
My aunt Rita said your mum said you were Salman Rushdie's editor.
No, not exactly. He was edited by a colleague of mine, but I had lunch with him once. Well, it was a sales lunch and we rotated, so I only ate with him for the dessert. But he was nice.
You had Salman Rushdie for dessert.
I ate his cherries.
You had Salman Rushdie's cherries.
I was pregnant and had a craving for cherries.
Oh, how are you?
Great. Fine. Yeah. Happy as Larry.
Oh, tell me all. The sad decline into prosperity and economic viability and nice clothes.
Ooh, where to start? I'm married. Harry is from Cork originally. Mm. Met over there and got married 8 years ago. He's in IT. And he was offered to move back here because his company's subsidiary here started to thrive. I have a new contract, editing my own list. Basically, I'm my own boss, so I can work from here, no problem.
Anne Dorgan, what about you?
It's Anne Sweeney now.
You changed your name when you got married?
Yep.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought. So tell me about the publishing thing.
My imprint's called Hibernia. They like the Roman vibe.
Hibernia, it's a good name.
I have to go to London for 2 weeks and four. Two kids. Sandra in the red jumper and Jane over there on the top of the slide. Sandra's 7, Jane 5. The ordinary life, the ordinary miracles.
The job sounds cool.
Oh, it's pressure, though. I've got to make some discoveries.
You have to find the next James Joyce.
Well, no. I think they'll prefer the next John Grisham.
James Joyce is the best-selling author of all time. Proof positive that there's money in genius.
Try telling that to the financial controllers.
You look so different. The face is the same. You just look different.
Oh, the years take their toll on a girl.
It's the colours. You never wore anything but black in college. That's it.
Yes. We're all so gloriously depressed and dysfunctional in our black.
Well, I got married and unmarried. Oh. And I have a little girl, Virginia. There. The redhead.
Oh, she's gorgeous.
She's 7 now. Careful, Ginny. Oh, I hate when she does that. She loves hanging upside down off things. I think she thinks she's a bat.
What are you doing?
I'm doing a bit of freelance copy editing for an industrial magazine.
Ah.
Things haven't quite worked out tremendously brilliantly, you know.
You were so brainy. I always thought you were going to go and become a professor or and become some sort of licensed genius.
Ah, yes.
I thought you were all set for the fast lane of academic success.
I went to Oxford and got a first-class MA.
Ooh, sounds very grand.
I started a PhD called Virginia Woolf and the Crusade for the Modern Mind.
Uh-huh.
I was working out a format, a twin-track progression of Virginia Woolf's feminist vision on the one hand and her mental illness on the other.
Oh.
I felt I had identified a mechanism whereby her illness created a gateway, if you like, for visionary change in her novels.
Mm-hmm.
I was just really getting onto something. I was identifying a cause and effect mechanism when disaster struck.
What?
I met a man and fell into besottedness. It was like being ill, really. I took a year out to get married and have a baby and somehow I never got back to the work.
You called your daughter after your PhD?
Yes, I called my daughter after Virginia Woolf. That is what I did.
Virginia. Yeah, it's a nice name.
No PhD, but alive and kicking Virginia. Irony. I used to love irony. He shagged off to America and is a physics professor at Harvard. And I've had to prioritise making some sort of a living, so no PhD.
It's a pity. Couldn't you get back to it now?
You haven't changed, Anne. Still full of encouragement.
Why can't you get your ex-husband to foot some of the bills?
He's remarried over there and has another kid now. He's not that well off, and I have my pride. I will look after my daughter.
And has he not offered?
He pays for Virginia to go over there to visit, and it's very expensive.
But could you not get back to your PhD on a part-time basis?
I'm sure you're a great editor.
Oh.
Nah, I'm too old now. I've missed the boat. I've been out of it too long. I keep on top of the trends, but my genius was forged a long time ago. I'm a relic, I'm afraid. A hoary old feminist relic. The tide just went out and left me beached.
You used to be sitting there in the Belfield bar on top of a bar stool and your huge brain was a wonder to us all.
Stop!
You can't possibly be doing so little. You, of all people.
Anne, you aren't making me feel any better. You're supposed to say something like, but you look marvellous and isn't it lovely to have a lot of freedom?
I'm not trying to make you feel... Oh, no. Oh, Sandra's hanging upside down.
Oh, Jenny, stop doing that. It's a bad example. Sit upright.
No, ma'am, I love it. Mummy, I'm upside down. I'm an icicle.
You get a rush of blood to the brain. Seem to have piled up. Yes, I said blood to the brain.
Now come on, stop it, or we're going home.
Oh, poor Jane looks a bit left out. She's socially more awkward than her big sister.
Social awkwardness is a great incentive in life.
Virginia doesn't really look like you.
Oh, she's the image of her dad. He has red hair and a very handsome face. I have recessive genes. Even in that, in the matter of genetic reproduction, I am ineffectual.
Stop that, Sally.
Yours are the image of you, you alpha female.
Harry always complains that he doesn't see himself in them. I think it's a ploy to make me go again.
He probably wants a son. Men always want sons so they can fantasize about the football career they never had.
That's not exactly Harry's style.
What's he like?
Hard to describe, really. He's cool.
Funny, I remember you saying you didn't believe in marriage.
Yes.
And the pram in the hallway is the enemy of promise.
That isn't how it turned out.
It was for me.
I can't help noticing, Sally, that Virginia is dressed head to foot in pink Barbie stuff.
Yeah, I surrendered to Barbie merchandising a few years ago.
So did I. I put up no fight at all, really.
Oh, I put up a fight, all right. All that pink just makes me want to puke. But I was outflanked. I was caught in a pincer movement between my mother-in-law's presence and my sister's.
Yes, I just crumpled. We have Barbie all over the house. With two girls, it's worse. Oh. Have you seen the pink catalogue?
Yes. And we've the Barbie kitchen.
Sandra got wedding day Barbie, and we've a shopping Barbie, and a Barbie ATM.
Oh, how we mighty have fallen.
Barbie used to be the arch enemy.
And now she's a welcome guest.
Anything for a bit of peace and quiet. Sad, really.
Did you ever keep in touch with any of the old crowd?
No.
Stephen Blake?
Ah, Stephen.
Well, I see Stephen from time to time. He's had a bad time. When he got out of prison, he just lost the plot for a while. He travelled around India, South America, places like that. He kept in touch, though, sending me postcards from all over the globe. Then he had a nervous breakdown after his father died. Oh, he was in hospital, really depressed for a while. But he pulled out of that.
Stephen was another big, huge brain.
He's great company, really lively, always raises the stakes.
What's he doing?
Trying to write. Writing.
Ah, yes. Writing. We always wanted to write. Do you remember the play you were for Dramsock?
Yes, of course. I was the stage manager for that.
I did a line with Stephen for a while. You know that.
Of course.
I played the girl in his play, Author's Girlfriend's Prerogative.
Of course. Oh, you were in the car when it crashed. And you were in hospital for ages. Of course. I had forgotten. Well, I hadn't really forgotten. It had just gone out of my mind.
He was the first boyfriend I ever had.
I was so jealous of you, because I fancied him too.
And now?
No, we're great friends, me and Stephen, but it's not like that.
The last time I saw Stephen was when I visited him in prison. He was in some open place in Wicklow.
In Shelton Abbey.
That was it. Like a hotel, really.
It was pretty harsh, the sentence. 5 years. Though Stephen ended up only serving 2.5.
It was a wake-up call to us all. The accident.
Stephen still laments the death of the woman. Awful, really. The consequence of one bit of drunken madness. And then a woman is dead.
I haven't thought about Stephen for ages. In the early days, I used to worry about him a lot. But then I just had to get on with my life, you know.
I've got to go. Got to make a crucial appointment at ballet lessons. Give me your number. We'll meet up.
There's my card.
Fancy. Stephen, you're hopeless. Look at you. You look so scruffy.
What's wrong with me?
That sweater. It looks like you use it to paint in.
I do use it to paint in. It's very cosy.
You could have made an effort.
An effort?
Yes.
I should dress up because royalty is coming. I can't believe you talked me into this.
It's a good idea. She's looking for writers. You're looking for a publisher. Hey, hey, two favours with the one stone. She's a commissioning editor. She just happened to go to college with you. You might as well take advantage of the contact. And if it doesn't work out, so what?
Look, I'm not doing it.
You have got 28 rejection letters for your novel. Only 2 of them gave any indication that that manuscript had been read. She's not going to say yes just because she knows you. She's a professional, for God's sake. At least she'll read the damn thing and give you proper advice.
This is stupid.
What's the novel called, by the way?
Innocence.
That's a nice title.
I don't want to hear another word about it.
Oh, suit yourself, pet. Let's see how things develop. It'll be a nice get-together anyway.
You're a lot more optimistic than I am. The last time I saw Anne was... She's not going to be happy to see me. And I'm not thrilled at the prospect of seeing her.
That's all ancient history. We're middle-aged now. You and she were screwing each other at college. So what? You and I screwed at college. It's the dim and distant past.
I'm not middle-aged.
Approaching it. We all are. Half our life, the best half, is over.
Balls. I'm just warming up, and the best half of my life is not over. That is not a fact.
We're 37, and that is middle-aged. Face it. Wait till you see Anne. She was wearing a twin set. Got that? A pale blue twin set. And a very expensive-looking linen skirt to below the knee. It was shocking.
and flat shoes. Trendy looking, Italian looking, but flat. Don't you remember she used to always wear those black spindle-heeled boots? 5 inches high they were. Weapons, not footwear.
No, I don't remember.
You must remember. They had S&M brass buckles all over them.
Oh, something's coming back to me now.
Heavy boots, even in the summer. And she always wore mini skirts that barely covered her bum. Now to look at her, you wouldn't even think she had a bum.
I think I'll go before she comes.
Look, just meet her. And then you can leave any time. See how it goes. You can send her on the manuscript later if you think it's cool. Just play it by ear. I'll go down.
Feck. Oh, feck.
Oh, hi, Sally. How are you?
Oh, lovely to see you.
You too.
You
look very
fine.
Feckity. Feckity.
Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Anne.
Let me take your jacket.
Oh, great. Thank you. Oh, this is for you.
You shouldn't have.
Ah, I just picked it up across the road in the off-licence. It's a lovely dry Croatian. Really, you can't buy French wine anymore. It's just crazy money. Decadent.
Red or white, Anne?
White.
Off with its cork.
Where's Virginia?
Asleep. I read to her about half an hour ago and she dropped off. We have to be a little quiet, because if we disturb her, then it'll be extended bedtime stories, including acting out, and that is not fun.
This is for her.
Oh, Anne, you shouldn't have.
Go on, open it.
Oh, a pink fairy dress. It's utterly repulsive. She'll love it.
So?
So?
You've moved back to Ireland, Sally says.
Yes. I've bought a house. Mm.
So Sally said. In Ballsbridge.
Yep.
And you've two little girls?
Sandra and Jane. This was taken at Sandra's 5th birthday party.
Oh, they're beautiful.
Aww. Yeah, they are. And this is my husband, Harry.
He's not as beautiful as the girls, but fetching in his own way.
Sorry. Yes? Well, try the hot press. I think I might have dumped them in there. Okay. Okay. Yeah, see you. No, that's fine. See you. Sorry about that. Everything is still all over the place and we can't find anything. Oh. They say that moving house is as stressful as divorce. And I'm beginning to agree with them.
People who say that are always people who've never been divorced.
Where are you? You go.
No, you.
I'm sure what you were going to say was much more interesting than the banality I was offering.
No. Banality was the road I was going. I don't get dangerously witty until later in the evening.
Okay, we'll do my banality first. Where are you living?
Temple Bar. My brother has a flat there and I'm his poor relation.
How's your mum? I loved your mum.
Still slinging the hash.
And dad?
Dead.
Yes, your dad.
My dad is dead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No need to be. We were estranged, really. He didn't want to see me before he died.
Oh, when did he die?
8 years ago.
I'm sorry.
Hardly your fault. He had some property, shares, and he cut me out of his will. That's why Graham feels he has to put me up, because my father's will paid for his Temple Bar flat.
I'm sorry.
We hadn't spoken in years. He never forgave me for the accident, you see.
Ah.
This is so morbid. I am sick of the subject of Stephen's father's will. It's 8 years ago. Stop brooding about it.
I am fortunate to have Sally to keep my thinking correct at all times. Left to my own devices, I suck personal lemons all the time. Sally polices me, and I'm eternally grateful to her for this.
I don't police you. I just get a headache when you bring it up.
You've lots of contemporary fiction here. You keep up.
Yes, I write unsigned vitriolic reviews for a certain satirical magazine. I like to think that it functions as a drainage valve, and that in all other areas of my life I am malice-free.
You deliberately write bad reviews, even for books you like.
Don't sound so surprised, Anne. Somebody has to write them. It might as well be me. It doesn't pay much, but it keeps me in free books.
But what if you get a book that you genuinely love, that you simply cannot think of a bad thing to say about it?
Somehow that hasn't happened yet.
Hmm.
So what kind of novels are you looking for your new imprint?
Well, I have a broad enough brief. Obviously, I have to consider the commercial end of the market and try to groom some money spinners.
Chick Lit, isn't that where it's at? All girlies and bathtubs?
Chick Lit is finished.
So, what'll be the next big thing?
I don't know. Novels about pets. Cat Lit. I have to preempt the trends.
I believe the future's in porn. Clit Lit.
But to satisfy myself, I will also publish more serious literary stuff. I want my list to develop a strong identity.
What kind of identity?
Well, in many ways, that'll be formed by what comes in. I can't fully say.
Yes, but in an ideal world.
I'd like novels that engaged with the issues of today.
You should sign up celebrity soccer stars and then ghostwrite novels about sinuous Irish athletes married to supermodels. And the soccer players turn out to be alcoholics and the supermodels smackheads.
How about a TV programme to find a boy band and then, to coincide with their first single, all their sisters should publish novels?
Wonderful ideas. I'll bring them all to my next strategy meeting.
Stephen writes?
Ah, yes. I remember your play in college. What was the name of the part I played?
Miss Red, the betrayer.
That's right. All the characters were called after colours and there were bodies everywhere at the end. Bodies in balaclavas, Tarantino-esque.
That was pre-Tarantino.
Uncannily preemptive of Tarantino.
Yes, the balaclavas.
I was naked except for the balaclava. Was I naked or have I just imagined that?
Miss Red was naked in the final scene,
yes.
But for the balaclava, for artistic reasons.
Oh, no. The reasons weren't artistic. I wanted everybody to see how beautiful my girlfriend was, and I wanted them to be jealous.
Stephen has written a novel.
Sally.
He told me not to mention it, but I thought Anne might
like it. Sally.
It's called Innocence.
Sally.
He's had 28 rejections for it, but only 2 of the rejectors had read it.
Sally.
What's it about?
Yes, Stephen, what's it about?
I told you I didn't want the matter raised.
Anne, do you mind that I brought up the fact that Stephen has written a novel?
Not in the slightest. I'm curious, in fact.
See?
Look, let's drop the subject of my literary failures, OK? I'm a bum, and I live mainly on the dole. Yes, I have scribbled a novel, but it is a reject.
You can't just say I'm a bum. Nobody is a bum.
I am a bum.
You have no right to be a bum. You had brains to burn, Stephen.
Yes, I have every right to be a bum.
Well, what gives you the right?
Well, I had a nervous breakdown.
Big swing.
You, Anne, have been a success, obviously. Every pore of you oozes success and contentment and prosperous connubial bliss. I am a bum. Sally here is also a bum, except she has the beautiful and dynamic 7-year-old Virginia to show for herself. I have nothing.
You're only, what, 37? If you're serious about writing, 37 is a good time to start.
Excuse me, I am not a bum.
Yes, you are.
What's bum like about me?
You abandoned your PhD in mid-canter. A little push and you would have finished. Instead, you flunked out. That is a bum-like thing to do.
I had a crisis of confidence.
You squander your talents on miserable, mean-minded reviews using 1/10 of 1/10 of your brain. Why did you abandon your PhD?
I don't have to explain myself to you, Stephen.
No, true. In fact, you don't have to talk to me at all, except that I'm about the only person you spend time with. You've lost contact with your other more high-flying friends because you started to feel uncomfortably inadequate with them. I have the great social benefit of making nobody feel inadequate, not even you.
That is not true.
You could get back to it.
The moment has passed.
You could start work on something else.
Maybe. If I ever have another idea in my brain, I might consider it.
What might you think of?
Stephen, why don't you tell Anne what your novel is about? Pitch it to her like a movie script.
No.
Go on, Stephen. I'll freshen up our glasses and we'll sit quietly and be an attentive audience. You can just imagine you're in Hollywood and you're pitching us the story and we're studio executives with our pockets bulging and our tongues hanging out. Your stage, sir. Mr. Blake, sir.
I'm not doing this, Sal.
Anne, do you want to hear it?
Yes, really, I do. I'd love to read it. I swear, I'll read it completely objectively as though it has just come in from one of the agents. I'll forget I know you.
Go on, Stephen.
It's not appropriate.
Go on.
Go on, Stephen. You are not a bum. I'm sure your novel is interesting and unique. Go on.
We're agog.
No way. Get me out of here.
If he doesn't want to do it, don't force him.
I was looking forward to it. He's kept this novel of his fairly close to his chest, you know. Even I, his alleged best friend, know nothing about it.
Have you got interior decorators for your house yet, Anne? I occasionally work for a painting firm and we might give you a very good quote.
I'll bear that in mind, Stephen. We haven't got round to thinking about anything like that yet.
And Stephen will continue to be a painter and decorator for the rest of his life, unless he pitches his novel.
I like being a painter and decorator. What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with being a painter and decorator.
You're a bourgeois snob.
Yes, I'm a bourgeois snob who likes to be entertained by written tracts commonly referred to as novels. Sit and tell us a story.
Sally.
Sit. You pitched for a painting job.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. I heard you. You asked Anne for a painting job. Why not pitch your novel?
It's different.
More precious, the novel, huh?
Yes, it is.
Your novel is more precious than your house painting. I thought labour was labour in your Marxist eyes. Who's bourgeois now?
You got me.
Well, Anne is not really interested in cut-price, semi-legal, half-assed painters, but is, in fact, actively searching for novels. It's her job. She gets up in the morning, goes to her office, saying to herself, I must keep my eye out for any good novels that might be discarded in the hedgerows.
Okay. Okay. You've asked for it. Let us begin. The main character is a guy called Andrew Spain.
Hmm.
He is 30 years old and contemplating the mess that has been his life.
Mm-hmm.
He stands on top of the cliffs at Dorky Quarry, preparing to jump. And before he jumps, he sits down to have a last cigarette. And his life flashes before his eyes.
Sounds cool. A cliffhanger.
The chief disturbing event in his life is a car crash, which occurred when he was a student. He closes his eyes, and he is back there. His girlfriend's name is Laura Smith, and she is a tall, dark beauty. He is a weak man, our hero Andrew Spain, but his love for her is boundless. One fateful night, Andrew is having a party in his house while his parents are away in Tenerife. It is a very boozy party, and everybody's tired and emotional. Arguments are erupting everywhere, and Andrew and Laura leave the party, taking Andrew's father's Mercedes to go and watch the sunrise from Dorky Hill. On the way there, they collide with a yellow Ford Escort. Laura, no seatbelt on, is thrown clear of the car. The single occupant of the other car has crashed through the front windscreen and lies horribly twisted on the bonnet. Andrew rushes to Laura's side. He feels her pulse. She's still breathing. He tries to rouse her without success. She is half twisted round a fence. He goes to the woman in the yellow car. No pulse. Ambulances come screeching and policemen and flashing lights and mayhem. They speed off with Laura in an ambulance. The driver of the yellow car is pronounced dead at the scene. She is a nurse named Holly White. She's married and has two small daughters. Andrew has not a scratch on him. The paramedics check him over and everything seems fine, except for shock. He has several symptoms of shock. The police read him an official caution as driver of the vehicle that he may face criminal charges. This is the standard caution, do you understand? We read this to everybody, so they have been cautioned. His mind is full of the stillness of Laura. The pictures of that night haunt him. The red blood on the yellow car, Mrs. White's red blood, and the thought of her two small children left without their mother. Laura is in a coma from which he may or may not emerge. When the police came the day after to interview Andrew about the accident, he did a strange and unpredictable thing. He said he had been driving the car at the time, when in fact it had been Laura. She had snatched his parents' car keys from the drawer where they were kept and ran out into the front garden. He had followed her. She had got into the car and reversed down the drive. He had run after her, begging her to get out of the car. I'm not drunk, she had insisted drunkenly. I've drunk hardly anything. Get in. I want to watch the sunrise. He had got in beside her, and she had driven off. And she'd been driving fairly carefully, he thought, when they rounded a bend and the yellow car was veering onto the wrong side of the road. He was of the opinion that Mrs. White may have fallen asleep at the wheel. This explanation he offered in his defence, but they had taken a blood sample and his alcohol level was over 2.5 times the legal limit.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Mrs. White, like Tarantino.
Yes?
You're telling me that he wasn't driving the car? that she was?
Yes.
This isn't the truth, is it? I wasn't driving the car, was I? You're not telling me that I was driving the car, Stephen. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
You?
Yes, me.
Laura Smith. Laura Smith was driving the car.
Yes, yes, I know it's Laura Smith in the novel.
So?
Tell me, is this supposed to be true?
It's fiction, Anne.
You put your fag out in my beer.
Sorry, I thought it was empty.
You put your fag out in my beer.
Sorry, I said sorry.
You put your fag out in my beer.
Sorry.
Fag out in my beer.
Jesus, wet.
Come away,
Oh, what a tosser.
Yeah.
Let's go away, Stephen. Let's go and watch the sunrise at Dorky. Let's get away from these pricks.
How do we get there?
We'll take your dad's car.
We've been drinking.
Ah, it's 4 a.m. Nobody be on the road. We'll be grand. I love this song. It's the first song I ever loved.
Anne! Jesus, Anne!
I'm afraid she's dead.
She's alive!
John! Over here, this one's breathing.
Anne!
What do you mean it's fiction?
It's a novel. It's my novel. It's called Innocence.
Stephen, are you telling me that I crashed that car?
Don't you remember what happened?
I was in a coma for 3 weeks. I suffered memory loss. Don't you remember?
Girlfriend in a coma. I know, it's serious.
I suffered severe short and medium-term memory loss.
Girlfriend in a coma, I know, it's serious. There were times I could have murdered
Stephen,
her.
Shut up.
He's lying. He must be lying.
So that's why he wouldn't show me his manuscript. I've been pestering him about it and pestering him.
This is all rubbish, Stephen, isn't it?
We know the facts. Let's stick to the facts.
The facts are you were convicted of drunken driving and dangerous driving causing death. The case was proved. You were charged and everything while I was still in the coma.
The case was never proved.
What do you mean it was never proved?
It was never tested in court. I pleaded guilty.
And why did you plead guilty? You pleaded guilty to something you hadn't done. That's perjury.
I pleaded guilty because I felt guilty. No, not me. That's it. He, Andrew Spain. He pleaded guilty because he felt guilty. He felt he should have stopped her. He could have. He was bigger and stronger than her. He could have slapped her face until she came to her senses, but he didn't. He got in the car beside her, beside his drunken girlfriend, allowed his drunken girlfriend sit behind the wheel of a 2.4-litre car, a lethal weapon.
Why are you coming up with all this now, Stephen?
He pleaded guilty because he was insured to drive his parents' car, and she wasn't, and he knew that whatever the outcome, it would be covered by insurance, and that would be better.
This is a load of crap. He'd have told me this over the years if it was true.
He pleaded guilty because he knew that this was heavy shit and he loved her so much that he would go to prison for her. He would suffer for her. No greater love. Girlfriend in a coma.
Shh! Keep your voice down. You'll wake Ginny.
But surely the police couldn't just be fooled like that. Surely I had to be cut from the car or something.
No. You were thrown from the car. You ended up wrapped round a fence, like a rag doll. No seatbelt. I was wearing a seatbelt. Correction. He, Andrew Spain, he was wearing a seatbelt. He is the type of person who wears seatbelts.
Why have you never told anyone? This is bollocks.
He told them in the prison he wasn't guilty. But, nobody in prison says they're guilty. By their own accounts, they're all innocent. He just fitted right in. It was strange. After a time, he started feeling guilty. That was weird. He started feeling they had got the right culprit. He was raped by a cellmate. Anne, have you ever been anally raped?
This is enough, Stephen. Stop it.
Have you, Sally?
Stephen!
Well, I have, and let me tell you, it's rough.
You never told me that.
It's not the kind of thing one boasts about. Guess what, darlings? I got ridden in prison. My arse was ripped to shreds. I couldn't sit down comfortably for 2 years. Sometimes I get a painful fissure even now.
Are you trying to tell me I was driving the car?
Not you, Anne. She. Let me give you all a refill. he gets himself transferred out of hell and into an open prison. They fear for his mental health. He is raving about his innocence in a distinctly unmentally healthy way, but he consoles himself with reports of how Laura is doing. She's pulled out of the coma. She's eating. She is sitting up. She is reading. Her hair has fallen out. It has grown back a different colour. She is coming to visit. There she is, skinnier than before, but it is her lovely self. She has come to thank him for what he has done for her. He is going to kiss her and know heaven.
After the accident, my hair grew back fair. It used to be dark.
He waits for her in the place the inmates refer to as the parlour. He gets up and she looks at him, but there is no light in her eyes. She doesn't know him. Andrew, she asks. He nods. I couldn't picture you, she said. I've been trying to remember what you look like, but I can remember now. He puts his arms around her and hugs her, but she draws away, cold as a fish. I'm going away, she says. For good, I've come to say goodbye. He stands stock still, shocked. Do you remember the accident? She shakes her head. Nothing, she says. I remember nothing. People say there was a party. I don't remember. And you don't remember driving out to Dorkie? And she shakes her head and puts out her hand to shake his and is gone.
After the accident, I pulled myself together. I had to move away from it all. There was too much dope and drinking. We were against everything.
Would he do time for you?
What?
Harry, the husband. Would he do time for you?
Halt, halt. Let's rewind the tape here. Stephen, are you saying really that it was Anne here who was actually driving the car on the night of the accident?
Does he love you enough to lay down his life for you? Would he take it up the ass for you?
I am not going to dignify that with an answer.
Stephen, stop it. Is it true?
What do you think, Sally? Anne here doesn't remember a thing, as we all know. Girlfriend in a coma. What do you remember? You were at the party. What do you remember?
Well, I do remember the party. Very clearly, in fact, because I arrived late and I was sober for a while at any rate. It was very boozy. I was with a guy from Ag Science, big farmer from Louth. Do you remember him? He was a panic, a real comedian. Oh, there was loud music. I remember the pizza man arriving with a huge pile of pizza boxes on the back of his motorbike. A leaning tower of pizzas. Anne was really depressed over something.
Do you remember us leaving?
I think I do. Anne said something about wanting to be purified by the rising sun.
She wanted to witness the pure innocence of a new day.
Oh, if I close my eyes, I can see the two of you in the kitchen so clearly. Anne was wearing a black lace get-up like something out of Lorca. And Stephen, you were in a Coca-Cola t-shirt and jeans. I was in the kitchen making tea for your man. He was a great man for the pot of tea in the middle of a party. I was trying to make the tea and he was mauling me. Do you remember him?
The party, Sally. Tell us what you remember.
She put a fag out my beard.
Oh, take me away from here, Stephen. I want to get away from these. These.
Sally, you've gorgeous tits.
Oh, and shut up.
Am I not supposed to say you've gorgeous tits?
No.
Okay, you've terrible tits.
Just leave my tits out of this.
But like, I'll wet the pot.
Mind the house, Sal. Oh,
I can see you leaving. Yeah, I can see it. The two of you are going out the door.
The car keys. Who has them?
Oh, blank. I'm sorry. I'm not even sure if I'm remembering anything correctly. Or is it just that I've recalled it to mind so often, like we all have?
Nobody remembers at all, except me.
There was one thing that always puzzled me, though.
What?
In all the time I'd known you, Stephen, you had never before taken out your parents' car when you were drunk. You were always very cautious about drinking and driving. It was very out of character. That's the thing I remember that puzzled me about the accident.
So, waiting for the sun to rise and drench us with its cleansing fire. Oh, damn. My skirt is snagged.
Nice legs.
Naughty, naughty.
Just observing the landscape and the wildlife.
I can't believe I'm up this late. I'm normally in bed by 10:30. I'll be wrecked in the morning.
The sun will rise at precisely 4:20.
You're an expert on sunrises.
Yes,
I always check them in the newspaper. Like a vampire. Listen.
I can't hear anything.
Birdsong.
Oh. Yes.
The dawn chorus.
It's pretty.
It's not pretty. It's magnificent. I always love it here.
You come here often.
Yes. I've watched the sunrise in this place so many times. I keep coming back here. Maybe this time. With you here. It's where the novel is set. He, Andrew Spain, my hero, is sitting here on the edge of the cliff, peering over, trying to gather the courage to jump. He teeters there, smoking his last cigarette. And then the story is told in flashback.
Does he jump?
I suppose I won't tell you. Narrative device. Create suspense and tension. It's my miserable attempt to lure people into finishing the book. The hope is that, unlike himself, a reader might feel enough for him to care whether he lives or dies. Would you look at it?
I'll tell you what I'll do. I won't look at it myself, but I'll give it to a colleague who'll be able to give it an objective read and assessment. If you want that.
I suppose I would be very grateful.
Where is he sitting?
Right there, on the edge.
Oh, come away from the edge, please, Stephen.
Falling doesn't scare me. Does it scare you?
Yes. Come on, away.
Whiskey. Get in the mood for the sunrise.
And will we be cleansed?
Bollocks. Here.
Thanks. It all makes sense, you know.
What does?
That you took the rap for me. It all falls into place. I think I even remember it. I think I remember driving. I think it's coming back to me. I think I woke up from the coma and to begin with I remembered nothing and was presented with the facts as they were. I couldn't even recognize my mother and father when I came to, first of all. I haven't thought about it for so long, but there was always something nagging me about the accident. I've avoided thinking about it just to shut it out, really. I've hardly even told Harry about it. And now I feel I've been living a weird lie. Like I'm still in the coma, like I haven't really woken up. Like the life I've created for myself isn't really real, that Anne Sweeney is living an inauthentic life. When I was young, I always thought I'd be found dead somewhere with my knickers around my ankles. Thought I had a tragic destiny. And now I wake up in the morning and I'm shocked by the smell of freshly laundered sheets. I stare at my clean and pretty children and I feel I don't deserve them. I go to my job, which I love, and I'm well paid. And Harry. Harry is like an oak tree. Big and strong and pure and good. And now this all makes sense, and none of that does. I think I remember it all.
What do you remember?
Well, I remember the party. I never remembered that before. I remember the dancing and the peaches and even Sally's big groping boyfriend and my dress. My ancient black lace dress. I remember the house being full of people. I remember having an argument with somebody about a can of beer. I put my cigarette out in his can of beer and he was wretched over it. I think that was what got on my nerves. Here we were, young and privileged, educated, well-fed, and this grown boy was crying over a can of beer. That's when I wanted to get away. I wanted to get very far away from somebody who would cry over a lost can of beer.
And the driving. Do you remember that?
The driving. Yes. The driving. I remember driving. I drove straight out the front gate.
No, you reversed out the gate.
Well, I don't remember that.
You opened the sunroof for air.
Did I?
The music on the car stereo. Do you remember the music?
Music.
The Clash, London Calling.
You know, this is the first song I ever loved.
You're the first woman I've ever loved.
I had to get away from back there. I was beginning to hate everybody.
We'll make love as the sun rises.
Ah, let's get there first.
Who was driving, Anne? Come on, who was driving?
I can't remember. Reach in the back and get my bag. I've sweets in it.
What kind of sweets?
Big bag of Rolos.
Oh, great.
Give me a Rolo.
Oh, I'm so confused. It's hazy. It's so long ago. It's all blurry. I remember sweets. Rolos.
We were going to make love as the sun rose. That was the idea. Do you remember that?
Yes. I think I do.
It was a clear, bright morning, like this morning.
I needed to get air, to breathe in great lungfuls of clean air.
Would you make love to me now?
Steve. Is that what you brought me out here for? It's not going to happen.
What about your inauthentic life?
Oh.
You could be authentic here. We could roll around in the dirt and maybe get stung by nettles. That'd be authentic.
I have no desire.
You could even lose your knickers.
I have no desire. Please, don't be tiresome or I'll call a taxi and go home right now.
Okay. You won't be tiresome.
Why don't you have a girlfriend?
I'm too much of a disaster. Many women I go out with tell me I get them down. I induce suicidal tendencies in people.
That's not good.
It's 4 o'clock. The sun will rise fairly soon. Let's sit over there so we can get the best view.
Hi? Oh, hi. Yeah, I'm sorry. Of course you're worried. I meant to come home around 1:30, but then things went on and on. It's a long story. Yeah, I'll tell you later, darling. Well, I'm on top of Dorky Head watching the sunrise. Yes, it's a long story. I'll tell you later. Harry? There is something. Harry, would you do time for me? Time? In the sense of going to prison? Well, if I broke the law, would you go to prison for me?
It's not a hypothetical question. Well, it is hypothetical, but we'll say maybe if I did something, you know, like maybe a burglary, would you take the blame and go to prison? Oh, forget it. We'll talk later.
It's not a weird question. Well, it's not as weird as it sounds.
Oh, where's he gone?
He must have jumped. Jesus! Stephen, an old friend from college. No, she's at home. He's jumped. Oh, my God, Harry, what'll I do? I am calmed down. Oh, here he is. Yes, he's okay. It's a false alarm. All right, darling. I'll be home in half an hour. Bye, Harry.
I'm just waiting for the damn sun to rise.
I love you, Harry.
Yeah, see you later. You bastard.
Was that Harry?
Yes.
Checking up on you?
Hardly. He was worried when he woke and I wasn't home. He thought something bad had happened to me. Thought I had an accident.
Doesn't that feel claustrophobic?
No, Stephen, it feels normal.
When we were young, you always told me I was cramping you, suffocating you, making you feel claustrophobic.
You're a bit of a limpet.
You always possessed a chill. It mesmerised me, that frosty chill.
You shouldn't have pretended to jump over the cliff. It scared me.
There's a ledge over there which makes a good spot for a pee.
You don't have to pee dangling from a cliff face.
Just thought I'd spice up the evening for you.
Everything's fine, love. Honestly. No, please. Don't worry. I knew him from college. Everything's fine. I'm a bit drunk. Yes, I'm on the edge of a cliff, but everything's fine. A half an hour, okay. Bye. Oh, my phone!
Oh, no, Harry's fallen over the cliff.
Oh, no, my phone. Is there a way down there?
Well, there's one way. You were brave to come here with me.
Why?
To trust me not to throw you over.
Throw me over?
The cliff.
Why would you do that?
Habit.
Your usual response to sexual rejection is to throw the object of your unwanted desires over a cliff.
The last woman I killed was your age and had two daughters. It could be habit forming.
Don't, Stephen.
I could be a serial killer of mothers of two.
Where is that sunrise?
Maybe the watched sun never rises.
I'm getting tired.
I think I must have got the sunrise time wrong. It's 4:20 now. It should be up. It's late.
If it doesn't rise in another 5 minutes, I'm going home.
The last time you and I went to see a sunrise, it never came.
Let go of me.
No.
I'm not afraid of you, Stephen.
Maybe you should be.
I'll keep my hands around your neck, so if I'm going over, you're coming too.
And you think I care? If I've conveyed nothing else this evening, I thought I would have conveyed how little I care about anything.
Put me down, you prat.
No.
You hate me.
Is that a question?
Kind of.
No. Hate isn't right.
You hate me because of how your life has turned out.
No, I don't hate you. You are obviously a nice woman, a responsible mum of two little girls, just like her. The other woman I killed in the car accident. Her kids were just the same age as yours are now. In fact, Florence Nightingale was 37, your age.
Just don't do anything risky. Accidents can happen.
You didn't believe I could do it.
No, you're not a killer.
But I did before. I killed Florence Nightingale.
But I thought I was supposed to be driving the car.
No, no, we'll stick to the facts as established. No point in changing the facts now. The novel is a different reality that I invented in order to alleviate the pain in my head. Thanks for believing in it. No one else ever did. People take it so much for granted. The privilege of never having done anything unlivable with. No, I was at fault.
Oh, you bastard. You had me convinced. Are you sure? I think I remember.
You swallowed it.
That's a dreadful thing to do. You bastard, that's just scummy and mean-minded.
And sordid and inelegant.
You just made me believe I'd been living a lie.
Feel more authentic now? And besides...
What?
It doesn't matter who was driving. It was you who wanted to go.
The woman me did tempt and I did eat.
You'll never know who was driving. You never did. That coma was very handy.
I don't care who was driving.
There isn't a day goes by that I don't think of those kids. 18 and 20 now, just getting to the stage where they no longer need their mother so desperately. I think of them with pity, and then my mind goes into a whirl. And then I start to hate them. I see them, those two vulnerable little girls, sad on their birthdays in party dresses with big, teary eyes. And then they turn into vultures, eating me alive.
You're making a right song and dance out of this. Shit happens.
How can you say that? How can you feel no guilt?
Shit happens, Stephen. I tell you, all over the world. A butterfly flaps his wings in Venezuela and a man falls off the cliffs of Moher taking a photo of a spectacular cloud formation. Her number was up.
Anne, that's heartless.
You like it. That's it. You like wading around in this putrid swamp of guilt.
Don't say that.
It gives you something to do in your spare time. You spend it agonizing. A fine hobby. And those little girls with their big eyes and their party dresses, they're just an excuse for you to sit in your arse and be an arsehole.
How would you feel if someone took the mother of your two little girls away? Would you shrug it off?
It's a constant thought when you have children. Who would look after them if you died? But it happens. Mothers die every day, and kids survive. And you felt guilty about it for long enough.
I wish I could have spared my father.
No matter what my kids did, I would stand between them and harm, no matter what. Your dad? He should have stood by you.
And you feel no guilt?
No.
None at all?
What good would it do anybody?
But isn't there a price to be paid for that?
No.
You just haven't got the bill yet.
I'm a fatalist, Stephen. If a bill arrives, I'll pay it.
I often wonder what life would have been like if we'd made it to Dorky Head and seen the sunrise on that day. I would have qualified as a lawyer and had a different life. Maybe with you.
Being with me may not be the picnic you imagine.
I think that's the sun rising there.
It's beautiful.
I'm still back there.
Not you. He.
One thing you can be sure of is that the sun always rises. Every day dawns. That's for sure.
You've been listening to The Sun Always Rises by Katie Hayes. Kathy Belton played Anne, Dawn Bradfield was Sally, and Dara Kelly, Stephen Blake. Other parts were played by Sam Ford, Stephen O'Rourke, and Carl O'Neill. Sound supervision was by Mark McGrath. The play was produced by Aidan Matthews.